Today on Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel.
Todd Marinovich.
He's been called the Bionic Kid.
This boy has never tasted a fast food burger or fries.
I was really born into a very religious family, and that religion being football. My dad was a mad scientist when it came to training athletic ability. So in that sense, I was his guy to try new things with.
He would put you in a dark room on a balance beam, bouncing a ball. I mean, are those things true?
There were no off days. I couldn't cross the street to the beach until the workout was done. Things can get portrayed in the media that aren't the truth. He was Mr. Misunderstood. Larry Smith was my coach at USC at the time. He just took on the role of my dad. So everything he said, I was doing the opposite. I do regret leaving college early.
The Los Angeles Raiders select Todd Marinovich.
When I was playing with the Raiders, I felt like this can't be it. This can't be what I've spent my entire life training to get to. But I never felt the effects like marijuana gave me. I was like, thank God I have something now that can ease this tension that I've been feeling my whole life.
Marinovich was arrested, linked to banned small amount of cocaine.
Where are you in your relationship with addiction? Is it a constant struggle?
It's definitely a day-to-day, Rachel.
What happens when you're built for greatness, but never asked if you even wanted it? Todd Marinovich wasn't just born, he was designed. From the time he was an infant, his life was an experiment in human perfection. His father, Marv Marinovich, a former USC football player and strength coach, made it his mission to create the ultimate quarterback. No sugar, no fast food, no childhood in the traditional sense. Every move, every meal, every breath engineered for one goal, to be the best. And for a while, it worked. Todd became the prototype, the robo quarterback, the bionic kid, the athlete America couldn't stop watching. He was brilliant, disciplined, beautiful to watch. He was also breaking inside. Because when you're told your worth is tied into your performance, there's no room for being human. There's no room for curiosity, rebellion, or imperfection. And eventually, the same drive that made him great destroyed him. He fell hard. Addiction, shame, homelessness, headlines that made him a national cautionary tale. But the truth is, Todd wasn't a failure. He was the product of a system that doesn't know how to love a person unless they're winning. And here's the question that haunts his story, and maybe all of ours. If you're good at something, does that really mean you are meant to do it? Or can you be born with a gift that was never truly yours to begin with? Today, Todd Marinovich joins me to talk about what it means to reclaim your humanity after being built to be perfect. We talk about his father, his fall, his art, and the freedom that finally came when he stopped being the quarterback everyone else wanted and started being Todd. Because sometimes the greatest comeback isn't getting back what you lost, it's finally understanding who you are without it. Please enjoy my conversation with Todd Marinovich. I'm so happy that you're joining me today on Misunderstood. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Rachel.
So as I was just telling you before we joined on air here, when I mentioned your name in front of a group of people, everybody started getting animated and screaming about, oh my God, you have to have him on your show. Todd is somebody that I remember from my childhood. And as I said, everyone had a different version of your story, but the arc of it was, oh my God, that's the guy who was trained like a test tube kid to be an athlete. And when he finally had some freedom and finally was away from his father, he did all the things that he wasn't allowed to do, from eating bad foods and doing drugs, and it all fell apart. So that was like the arc of the story that I got in doing research about you and watching your 30 for 30 and reading, you know, this part of your book and like all the things now that I've researched about you. I find it, there's obviously so much more to that. Not all of that is like the real version, but I get why that's the, you know, shortened version of who you are. And I cannot wait for people to hear more from you directly. So again, thank you for being here.
You bet.
I wanted to start with your childhood. I mean, you've written a book. That's why you're here. And we'll get into that and how you, the process of writing a book. But if you could kind of walk us through this person that everyone thinks they know. Your childhood was one of the most, you know, recorded, famous childhoods that people have looked at and studied. So can you tell people that are listening that might not know a lot about you, where you were born, the family you were born into, and what
I was really born into a very religious family, and that religion being football. And my dad was a player and a coach, coached in the NFL and played with the Raiders and coached with the Raiders. But what really grabbed America's attention was the diet, and it wasn't necessarily true. I definitely was very healthy, and that part was true. But the part that wasn't was that I hadn't tried a Big Mac or a Twinkie, and of course I had. I just didn't want the repercussions of my dad finding out that I had eaten all those things. And I was 15 at the time when all this came out. So when it was national news, I felt like more of a freak than they were reporting that there's this quarterback that you should check out. It was more, there's a freak you need to check out. So that was very uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. So up until then, though, up until like the media really started getting a hold of your story, I think, you know, I'd like to hear what that, you know, that real childhood was when you were a kid. I mean, your dad has told stories about how he would put you in a dark room on a balance beam, bouncing a ball, doing math at the same time. I mean, are those things true? Were you doing all sorts of crazy things?
Those are true.
Wow.
My dad was kind of a mad scientist, so to speak, when it came to training athletic ability. And that was his big quest, is could you actually enhance somebody's athletic ability, or are you just dealt what you're dealt with? And so in that sense, I was kind of his guy to try new things with. And I've tried a lot of things over the years, and it some were great and some weren't very good at all. So, and that's with the, you know, with anything, what was really blown out of proportion was that I was trained to be a quarterback, and that was not true. Basketball is my favorite sport, and my dad didn't push me towards football. He just wanted me to be healthy as possible. But I did spend a lot of time at it, and that's, there were no off days since I was very, very young. I grew up on the beach, and that I couldn't cross the street to the beach until the workout was done. And that was just part of, I understood that. So it wasn't that big a deal, because my reward was I had some time to, you know, be a kid. So I couldn't imagine growing up anywhere else. The ocean is just, it's bigger than words. So I'm really grateful for my childhood and my upbringing.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. I'm curious about, I know you grew up with a sister and you have a half brother, right?
Yes.
And so obviously your diet, let's say, if we're just starting with that, and your physical training, because I know you did a lot of physical stuff. Your dad didn't have her go through any of that, or his other son, correct?
No, 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 and my sister was athletic. She played on the boys' golf team in high school because there was no girls' team.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, but he didn't spend the time like he did with me for whatever reason.
And not even with his other son?
He just, well, had a different mom, and she had different ideas of what she wanted his childhood to look like. So it was different, yeah.
Got it. So, okay, so while you were going through this as a young kid, you didn't necessarily feel like you were being punished or this was any sort of abuse. Okay, because I think in reading a lot of this and what people thought was that this was very, you know, your father had a very heavy hand and it was almost borderline abusive or way too strong of a father wanting to create something in you and deprived you from all sorts of things.
Well, you know, some things, you know, I just didn't get to do. However, I didn't know what I was missing. So we didn't really do those family vacations or camping or anything like that.
It was clear he held you to a higher standard and a different standard.
Yeah. And I got the lesson that there's just no shortcuts. And if no matter what you choose to do, you have to just spend the time. And that's why there has to be a love for what you do or you wouldn't spend the time. And I loved competing and playing sports so much that it was worth to me the sacrifice of doing something every day.
Yeah.
To just craft my skills. Yeah.
So you actually, I didn't know this. You said you loved basketball more than you even loved football. Why not push you in that direction when you were little? It was because he had a history and he was in the NFL and.
Yeah. The even though basketball was my favorite to play, I was just better at football.
Got it.
And so I felt that even though I think I could have played college basketball, anything further than that, I don't know.
Right. So as you become a teenager, again, for people that don't know the story, as you become a teenager and you are so, so much better than kids your age, but before you even get into high school, right? I mean, you are already starting to make waves. Is that why the media started to catch on to this kid who really stood out? Or what do you think was the original reason that people started to look at you?
Well, I think that what caught people's attention was no freshman in high school had ever started a varsity football game in my area here in Southern California. And so that's what grabbed people's attention. And I was always playing with older kids. And that's, I think, a huge part of it. And when you look at families with a bunch of boys, it's usually the younger one that is, because he's been playing with his older siblings. So it just makes sense. That's not rocket science there. So I always felt that I was playing with more mature guys and older guys. And that was the case.
So what was that like for you, though, as a freshman? I mean, I know that any freshman, going into that first year of high school, kids probably don't like you and are like, who the hell is this kid taking away our spot as a quarterback? So what was that moment like when they told you were starting the game?
Oh, my gosh. That was, and you're right, because that period was far greater than playing at the Coliseum against the New York Giants. It was scary. And the dynamics of the team, the older guys, the juniors and seniors, of course, they're all buddies. And I was coming in as a new guy. It was uncomfortable.
Were they mean to you? Did they like you?
They weren't nice. They didn't go out of their way to be friendly, but I had confidence that my play on the field would win them over. Right. And in time it did.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. All right. So let's get into, so again, for people that are listening, you are succeeding so much earlier than you really should be in life, I guess. And at some point you are turned on to doing some extracurricular things without your father knowing. I mean, you're still living at home, right?
Yes.
So you're not in college yet, but you do. Is this the first time you try pot? Is this the first thing you tried?
Yes, I was.
And you talk about that as like the this eye-opening moment. Like, where has this been in my life?
Yes, since then I've talked with hundreds of people about their first time and their first experience. And 15 is kind of late from my research I've done. Mm-hmm. And it was pot, and I snuck a couple hits off a cigarette one time, so I knew what inhaling smoke felt like. But I never felt the effects like marijuana gave me. And I was blown away to the point of, where has this been? It was my solution. I was like, thank God I have something now that can ease this tension that I've been feeling my whole life.
And did it just calm you down?
Yeah.
It made you, yeah.
Yes. So, it quieted this up here. And, right. And I found that sports and athletics does that naturally. It places you in the moment to where you're not thinking about what's going on at home or with your girlfriend. And it's magical in that sense. And so is art, the same way with that. It's it takes you from the day-to-day mundane.
Right. And it helps you compartmentalize, it sounds
yeah.
like. Yeah. Okay. So now you talk about quiet in your mind. I'm just curious to understand you a little more. It's obvious what the stresses were, right? I mean, you're trying to compete at a level that
yes.
That no one else can, essentially. Plus, you have the pressure of your father making sure that you are living up to your potential, and who cares what your team does, but it's all about you. So
yeah.
I'm just curious from your words, though, like what was so choking almost that was released by being able to smoke pot? What were you trying to, you know, what was so tough on you?
There's so much going on, I think, for any kid at that age that I just didn't feel, or even if I could even articulate what I was going through. I don't even know if that was possible at that age. I just, and I wasn't out looking for something to change. I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
So it fit me just so perfectly that, and it worked for a long time. And that's
right.
the kind of the insidious nature of substances. They do work.
Right. What if I told you that the idea that you only get parasites when you travel to some exotic country is flat wrong? Millions of Americans carry parasites right now, often without symptoms. For example, it's estimated that millions in the United States have been exposed to Toxocara, a parasitic worm, yet most never even know it. Parasites do not need a plane ticket. They can enter through tap water, sushi, undercooked foods, or contaminated produce. Some strains live in all stages, eggs, larvae, adults, hidden in your gut, releasing toxins that sabotage your energy and digestion. That's why I'm excited about Parify, Kim Rogers' 30-day full-spectrum parasite cleanse. The kit works by clearing parasites, worms, candida, and heavy metals, targeting parasites in all life stages, supporting gut health, detox pathways, and toxin removal. It's taken orally, daily, for 30 days with precise dosing. I'm actually doing it myself right now. I started with the lymph cleanse, then I'm doing the Parify. Want to dive deep? I did a full interview with Kim Rogers, the worm queen herself, where we expose all the myths, understand the facts, and show how to protect your body. Listen to that episode if you haven't already. Meanwhile, go to rogershood.com and use the code Rachel to get 10% off of your order. That's R-A-C-H-E-L for 10% off. Give it a try. Maybe your body's missing link is hiding inside. Let's do this together. Again, it's rogershood.com, rogershood.com, and use the code Rachel for 10% off.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
So actually, I'm curious about this because I know that you're...
I see that, Rachel.
your addiction turned into different things and yes. Harder things later. Listen, my father died of a cocaine overdose at 44 and I was 15. So that's why I'm curious I've tried everything. I always was very nervous that I was going to have that same addictive personality and not be able to stop. So I didn't get into like the harder stuff, but marijuana has never worked on me. It just doesn't work. And it makes people that I know lazy and I just not my thing.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if now that you've gone through all the different things that you've become addicted to, do you believe that pot is something that is a good thing? And do you continue to do it? Or is it something you have to quit all substances to be sober?
For me, I can't dabble or not go back and forth. It's really has to be clear. It worked, like I said, it worked for me for a time. And is it good for, it could be good for somebody and not good for the next person. So it's hard to say. I think it's important that young people know their family history about substance abuse, because I totally believe a big part of it is genetic, obviously. And then environment plays a big part too, and today's different with the strength of these drugs, and it's just a different world, and it feels so much more dangerous today that I don't want to say that it's harmless. Nothing is harmless.
Right. So even though it's legal in certain places, that's not something that you.
And I think
believe.
That's great that it is. I truly do. I'm for that. Let the person decide if they want to put it in their body or not. Don't tell me what I can, that type of thinking. But for one in recovery, I think it's dangerous waters.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on from that, then you move into college. And once again, you are the starter as a freshman, which again, I think as I was reading this and watching this on the film, that it must have been, again, really scary. And you felt probably a lot of pressure from the older kids that were like, who the fuck is this kid stealing my spot? but you killed it, right? I mean, you walked in there and showed everybody who you were. And it seemed like you immediately became part of that team.
Yes. And the thing about the game of football, the quarterback gets far too much attention. Because it's really about your supporting cast, and it might seem cliche to say, but I just walked into a team that was loaded with talent, and they just needed a guy to take the snap and not turn it over. And I did that to the best of my ability, and we got to win a Rose Bowl and have some really cool experiences. Yeah.
So what I've heard from other athletes is like winning at the Rose Bowl is like the equivalent of like hitting the biggest peak ever. And you could officially die after that. Like nothing, nothing good could ever happen to you like that again. Is that how you felt?
It was a big moment for sure. And it's hard to describe, the feeling of playing in just like a front of 100,000 people that, are passionate about what you do.
Right.
It's amazing. But I knew that wasn't going to last. I don't think you can have those too many times in one lifetime. It was special for sure.
Right. And as you get into college, you again start to, I guess, get into some deeper things. You got into cocaine, you were partying, right? Am I getting the timeline right?
You're right on.
And do you think that had to do with why you started to have some issues with your coach at the time?
100%.
Okay. Well, I didn't know if it was a personality thing, if he reminded you of your father. Like, I want to hear from you what those issues were.
For sure. You know, I didn't know it then, but Coach Larry Smith was my coach at USC at the time. And he just took on the role of my dad, subconsciously. So everything he said, I was doing the opposite. I was like a teenager, rebelling. And I feel for him, I mean, being put in that situation. I don't know how I would have handled myself. Not like he did, but I don't know if it would have been any better.
Right. So, and again, for people that don't know the story and are listening, there were times when, and correct me if I'm wrong, obviously, he would make a play or call a play and you would kind of change it up and you would still do the right thing. And it would just created this tension.
A lot of tension.
Yeah.
And at that time of my life, I was super rebellious. I was fighting everyone and everything. And that's part, I think, of being young. And so being a coach, I coach, you know, today, because of my experience, I try to be understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, for people that do know your story, a lot of people think it's just because once you went finally to college and you didn't have your father over you, this is why you had this rebellion. And this is why you started to put drugs in your system and eat whatever foods and not stand in a dark room and bounce a ball and stand on a balance beam because you were no longer being trained that way. Do you think it had anything to do with actually leaving your father's sight, or it was just you growing older?
I think they just went hand in hand as I got older. At that time of high school, 17, 18, I was coming to the end of the daily regimen with my dad. I was just, I think it's time we go our separate ways. And it wasn't discussed, but, and then I fell into like a lot of freshmen do that go to college. It's, nobody's waking you up. Nobody's making you anything for breakfast. So you get a little exposure to what life is like, and some people blow it up and are out of school within a year. Others seem to manage it better. You never know. And I do regret leaving college early. Looking back on it, you know, I was having so much fun at USC, and I just felt like the relationship with the coach was so severed that I had to go to the NFL. And there was no thought of transferring like today. Guys move all over college, from college to college. And I couldn't think of playing for anybody else.
Right. Yeah. So playing for the NFL, was that at this point like a dream come true?
Or for sure.
The next path? Okay.
Yeah. Dream come true. My earliest memories are wanting to do that. It was like, what else would I want to do? It made sense to me. And especially with what I was being exposed to.
Right.
I mean, a real football family. Yeah.
Right. So And as you're in the NFL, you're still dabbling in all these things and you're living in LA, right? It was the LA Raiders at the time.
Yeah, LA Raiders.
And were you, I mean, I read that you were hanging out with Charlie Sheen and doing all these things. Is this because you had been so famous for so long that they all saw you as a celebrity too and you played for the Raiders? Like, how did you get within that crowd?
Gosh, that's a good question. I don't know if any of them really knew my story up to the point of, I mean, when you're the starting quarterback for a professional football team in a big city, I was kind of a big deal.
Everyone wanted to hang with you and everyone wanted to give you drugs, I'm sure.
Some did. And I was welcome to that. I was completely open and I really didn't give myself the best chance if that was what I wanted to do.
Right. Which then brings me to my question, and I'm going to preface it with this. I had Ricky Williams on my show. Are you following his story? And in talking to him, the feeling I got from him is somewhat similar that I get when I listen to your story, which is just because you're good at something and everyone puts you on a pedestal and says, this is what he's meant to do. And this is what he has to do. Cause if he doesn't choose this, he's mentally ill. There's something wrong with him. What a loser. Like I would, if I had that talent, I would be doing this. What the hell is wrong with this guy? Then it's like they make it your issue. Whereas maybe just because you're good at something doesn't mean that that's what fulfills you and is your purpose. And that was my takeaway from Ricky Williams, that it's not that he was mentally ill. He wasn't a druggie and just chose drugs.
Yeah.
Football did not fulfill him. And he had a bigger calling and he did not find peace when he played. And he is in peace now.
Yes. So, love Ricky and love that whole idea, because when I reached the dream, when I was playing with the Raiders, I felt like this can't be it. This can't be what I spent my entire life training to get to. I was like, now what? I'm effed, you know? So I get that. And people, I think people in general, a lot of people can relate with that, whether it's a family that practices law and they feel like they are pulled into that area of life. And it's really, you got to do what you want to do. It's going to blow up otherwise. It's just a matter of time.
Right. Eventually it will blow up.
And I'm living proof, and there's countless others that are, of course, you want to listen to those around you, their input, but it's ultimately your decision.
Yeah. So, and not to harp on it, but, you know, it is public knowledge that then it started to all unravel and fall apart. And there is a whole rap sheet of things, you know, you getting arrested or being caught with things or not passing drug tests. And so, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, he's given all these chances and he just kept screwing up because he's an addict. But at some point you hit some sort of rock bottom to make a change. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I have had so many, rock bottoms, and they were, cause really that's a whole nother topic, is what is rock bottom. I think it's an emotional, hopelessness, because it's not about the things that you lose, because you can always lose things. It's truly about this feeling of hopelessness. And I've been there several times. And it's a messed up place to be, where you don't think there's a way out. And thank God for people, I tell you what, that have helped me out of that, because I can't. I mean, if you hear nothing that I say, hear this, is I can't do it by myself. And I've tried countless times. I need people around me that lift me up.
Yeah.
And that's just a people thing. I don't think it's even an addict thing. I just think we need each other. And I wouldn't, I know for a fact I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for my friends and family.
I think something that a lot of people do when they are having a hard time is they isolate because yes. they're embarrassed. There's all sorts of shame. You don't yeah. really want people to know. You get defensive about answering questions.
Yeah.
And there's got to have been a time, I know from listening to some of your friends talk that there were times when you almost isolated because I think you were still harboring this thought, you do not know what it feels like to be me. Like mm-hmm. you can't even fathom. And there are times when I have felt a similar thing. You don't know what I've been through. It's too hard for me to even describe the things that I've gone through for you to even understand why I'm behaving this way. So like, I can't even connect with you. And that has made me isolate too. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
For people listening that feel that isolation, how would you suggest, first of all, that misunderstanding that no one gets you? And you, of course, have lived a very different life than others, but I think there's a universal feeling of feeling misunderstood.
Yes. And what I've grown into is what you think of me is none of my business. And that is true. I don't have any control over what is said about me. And that has been a good life lesson to accept that and let that go.
Right.
And about feeling helpless and isolating. Isolation is so dangerous for somebody like me. Like I said, I just need people. And I need to be honest with these people. And that's what I found throughout my experiences. Sometimes honesty is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It just seems that the most uncomfortable things are the best things for me. That's weird, but it's anti-intuitive, but truly, I don't want to do the things that I should do.
Right.
And so those are the things that I need to put at the top of my list to knock out for that day.
Right.
And, athletics has given me the discipline to know, to be able to do that, to show up, and thank God for sports.
Yeah. So do you feel like your life started to turn around when you met your wife? I feel like you met her in rehab or in.
I did. Right? I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you guys been an amazing support or has that been hard? Cause you guys got to keep each other on a straight and narrow.
We are not together, but she is a very, very close friend and we co-parent. Okay. And she's got her own struggles and things to deal with too. Like a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it was my children that I never felt this. When she got pregnant and I knew our son was on the way, I had this fire lit in me that I needed to make money. And that was not in this person's thought life until that point. And being a dad has been, I can't even put to words. I think it's something that should not be missed if you're human.
That's a sweet thing to say. I agree with you. I have a 13-year-old and she changed my life. So you guys
right?
all live. Yeah, totally yeah. changed my life. Like it's also, you know, I think for me, I always struggle to understand love. I had a difficult relationship with my own parents and blah, blah, blah. But that's the first time you really know what doing something out of love is. And this unconditional love that people always talk about, like you will do anything for your children. I also feel similar to my dogs. Like these are things that I will always protect and do anything for. And it just changes you as a person. You're able to see things in a different way and you put them before you put yourself first, you know, and right. You don't really do that for any other human, no matter how much you say you're in love with someone, you know, in my opinion.
Yes.
Yeah. So you guys live in Hawaii. Even though you're not together with her, do you guys all live there and co-parent?
No. I come, my kids come out to Hawaii and I come back. I'm like back in Southern California now. Okay. And yeah, it works. I'd love to see them more. Mm-hmm. I just, made it a decision for me that I'm in the fourth quarter of life, Rachel.
What? No, you're
yes.
not.
Yes. But okay. I like to say I got two timeouts still.
Okay, well, what's going to happen in the fourth quarter? What are we going to do?
Well, that's usually when the stars rise.
Okay.
That time. Uh-huh. I'm not saying that's what's happening, but.
Well, why not?
It could happen, and there's a good chance. I felt I had a connection with Hawaii since I was in kindergarten because we lived over there for a few years. And I knew there was something special that I needed to check out again. I'm kind of saddened that it took me 50 years to get back, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the plan? You're there, you're coaching or managing some youth programs, right?
Is it just football or other things? Yes, I love doing stuff with kids. My rap sheet has kind of limited what I can do with kids in the sense of I was coaching high school football until that caught up with me and I don't do that anymore. Huh. But I can work with parents and their kids and there's a lot of those. And right. I just, and I love the one-on-one rather than a team coaching just for me anyways. And right. I call it teaching. Because I've experienced so much and spent so much time at doing this that I feel like I can really, I try to make things easier for the up and comer.
Right.
But I do.
Well, wait, that brings me to another question, of course.
Okay.
So do you feel like your fourth quarter is going to be like a comeback? Do you think there's anything to come back from? How do you think people view your life?
I don't know.
Well, because that makes me sad that because your rap sheet caught up with you. I mean, who cares? Yeah. You were young and everyone deserves a second chance. And there are plenty of people that, you know, right now in their lives, we've heard about them from decades ago and they are on a huge comeback. I mean, you see Manti Te'o on, you know, doing live football commentary now, you know, and everybody shamed him forever years ago.
Yeah, I think I'm qualified.
Yeah.
For the coaching position. And I love it in a way that if I could, I would do it for free. My fourth quarter, I have to create. That's who I am as a human being is I wither and die if I'm not creating. And that's a wide range of, you know, mediums to create in. And then for fun, it's giving back. I mean, addiction and substance abuse is a really selfish thing. And so what I've found is I am happiest doing something for somebody else. And when I get caught up in this, what do I need to do? That's mine. I need to get me. It's all bad. It's all bad for me.
Yeah.
A great day for me is what can I do for you? And what's next? What can I do for you?
Yeah.
I have amazing experiences and interactions and connections with people when I'm doing that.
Right.
Like I said, I don't like to do the things that are good for me. And that is 100% good for me.
Yeah. So you are an artist. You studied art in college.
Yes.
And you do paintings for yourself or commission? Like where
commission.
Are we at? Commission. Okay.
Yes.
Have you ever been in a gallery? Do people just contact you and say, make this? Like, what?
Yeah, a lot of that. I have a website and people, you know, and it's been fantastic. It's I never thought it was possible. I didn't know.
Is it mostly football art?
No, it's all kinds. Well, sports definitely play a big part of what I do because that's what people request. And I watch and read a lot about the masters of art and painters and sculptors and a lot of them have said, don't make art your way of making money. It'll change things, and it completely has.
Got it.
But it allowed me to practice and continue to improve and get better. However, I feel that I'm coming into something big for me creatively when I can step away from answering your email and saying I'm not doing that anymore, because it's hard to turn down money.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? Well,
yeah. Also, that's again, something Ricky Williams said as well, but you have to make money. I mean, you're a dad, you have to contribute to that. And you also want to live where you're comfortable and you don't have to worry about things. So you shouldn't feel bad about accepting money. And, you know, but here's the other question I had. What kind of, and I know nothing about art, but I've started to buy art for my new house.
Nice.
So I've kind of gotten into understanding it, and I've seen a little bit of your art. What's your medium or whatever? Are you doing like watercolor, oil based? Like what do you do?
I'm starting to go towards oil. But I've been using acrylic mainly because it just dries so fast and it's easier.
But is it stuff that is 3D, like comes out of the canvas, you know, when they do the oil and it kind of comes out? These are all such stupid questions, but I'm genuinely interested.
I'm not a illustrator.
Okay.
Or realism isn't my thing. I'm trying to create a feeling with color. And when I paint for fun, because I do, it's all about color and it's really abstract. And I'm fascinated by it. Yeah, it's my passion. And any time that I can lose the concept of time, I want to do that.
Yeah, I hear you.
It's healthy, you know what I mean? Because there's something magical about that. And I get into this place that is magical.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I want to go back to your being a father for a second. Obviously, your relationship with your father, Marv. Mm-hmm. How have you raised your children? That's either different or similar to how you were raised by your father.
I didn't go down the heavy-handed discipline route as my dad. Mm-hmm. And I was probably too lenient because of my experience. Super close with both of my kids. And it's been difficult because there's a line of, am I their friend or am I their parents? Or I just was at a time where, like I said, honesty was the best policy. And so I've just been honest with them, and they've seen a human being stumble and fall. And a lot of parents don't want their children to know that. And why not? And I had to ask myself, why not? Mm. And I got the answer is they should. Because they will, too, stumble and fall. It sets them up to think that they have to be perfect. And that's just, as we know, that's just not a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that growing up, if your father had let you sort of learn some lessons on your own by mm-hmm. giving you some freedom, that you would have been able to cope better when you got into high school, college, later in life, because you would have learned how to get yourself out of a terrible situation on your own?
I think it would have been different, but I don't know how different. There's nothing I don't think you could prepare a young person for the media onslaught of playing professional sports at a young age. That whole monster is super hard. I don't know how young athletes do it today. I really don't. Because there has to be balance there. And I still, that's what I'm doing today, is working on how am I better balancing my life? Because I'm so one track, I get focused, like laser focused, and then everything else is falling apart.
Yeah.
So I struggle still with that.
It seemed that later on in your father's life, he was able to spend some great time with your kids, right? Yeah. And you were able to have a different type of relationship with him where you were closer and friends.
Yes. Best friends with my dad towards the end. And it was truly beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. And I was scared. And that's what I'm hearing myself say these things is fear was a huge, ran my life forever. And I still am dealing with that. When my dad was his last years with dementia, I just wanted to run from that. He doesn't know who I am. But he always did. He couldn't put a name to me, but I could feel and see in him that he knew that I was somebody close.
No.
And I'm so grateful that I showed up for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
And it's also it must be hard for your kids too, who didn't get to grow up with him in their lives. And he's had such a huge impact. Something I read recently though, really struck me. It was a headline about, I don't know, some quotes about you with your father. And the headline was the worst father in sports or something. Your father. I didn't believe that came from you. And I just wanted to ask you if you could clarify about that article and your thoughts about your father being a father of someone in sports.
No, talk about misunderstood. He was Mr. Misunderstood for sure. Because the people that really really loved Marv, like would die for Marv. And there are many, many, many of those people out there. And so can't be that bad of a guy if you have these legions of people that would go to bat for you.
Yeah.
So things can get portrayed in the media that aren't exactly the truth.
Right.
And that wasn't the idea behind the book or the documentary that I did, but I thought the more I could hopefully show them, you know, the real me, I maybe can paint a clear picture for them about my dad. And he just had a huge heart. It never was about the money. He was trying to help somebody. And that's what I get from his legacy is helping.
Right. And it seems like he just loved you in a different way than me.
Yeah. The only way that he knew how. Right. And as I got older, I started to understand that.
Right. But loved you so much that he wanted the best for you. Maybe even things he couldn't have had on his own and wanted you to have that. I think that was very evident as an outcome. So, you know, he was, you know, coined with creating the methodology for training and assessing athletes. I wonder if you've ever talked to him about this before he died. But you know, he was using you to see how it would be as a test tube kid. Let's say you tried all these things and we see how life turned out. Do you think now with that methodology, he would have said, listen, now I've learned you do this, you don't do this. Like, what would he have said?
Oh yeah. He was open definitely to look back on things that didn't really work and things that, and training wise, just training, he was honing his skills. And by the time I was already long gone, he was really starting to come across some groundbreaking ideas and a system that he got to train Troy Polamalu, who is one of the best football players of all time. So I joke with Troy that you got Marv at his best. And he truly did. Yeah.
Yeah. But what do you think those would have been? I mean, did it have to do with the diet? Did it have to do with starting somebody at the age of basically a newborn to create this specimen?
He grew into the understanding of just because more doesn't make it better. And as he got older, the time off was as much as important as the time on. So, yes. You know what I mean?
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Because there was no rest when I was going through it. It was just one grind. Yeah.
Got it. So a balance.
Yes.
More necessary. Yeah. Yeah. So do you watch football? Are you?
I do. Yeah. When I was done playing, I didn't for years. I was done. However, my son now being 16 and playing in high school football, yes, I'm back in watching it.
Amazing. Do you have a favorite team?
The ones that I played for. I have a, yeah. So I root for the Trojans and also the Raiders.
And whatever happened to Coach Smith? Did you ever work things out with him?
Coach Smith passed away, and so I didn't get the opportunity. But yeah. I had an amazing conversation with his wife, Cheryl. Oh. And hearing her perspective throughout all our turmoil was so eye-opening. I mean, we cried, we laughed. I had truly a connection with Cheryl, and she's doing great in Arizona. Wow. But you just don't know the other side of the story when you're going through it. And when you get those pieces, it makes sense, you know, right. And I felt bad. And that's why I went and spoke with Cheryl about it.
Oh, that's amazing. And ultimately, is it that he felt disrespected because you weren't listening to him, or did he love you like a kid and just was just frustrated?
Yes, that one. Yeah. Like would stay up at night. Like, how am I going to deal with this kid?
Right. Oh my God. Well, that must have given you some solace and a little bit of closure.
Yeah.
I love that for you. All right. So you're doing art, you're living in Hawaii. What's next for you? Do you think you'll ever get married? Do you want more kids?
Gosh. I think I'm good.
Okay.
I love being, because in Hawaii, the uncle and the auntie are big staples in the family. And
you have
so,
a whole family or world there that you're very close to.
Yes. And I love being Uncle Todd. And it's really, the young ones call me Uncle Sauce because they can't say Todd. And I love that even better. Oh, Uncle Sauce.
Yeah. And I guess I know people are going to want me to ask this. Is there anything in your past that you would say, listen, I really wish that I did this differently because I'd rather be here in my life? Or are you really good with where you are and you're happy for your past? Like, what would you say about all that?
I wouldn't be honest if I said I had no regrets. There are a few in there. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't change anything. I really wouldn't. I, my addiction has kept me from being a day-to-day dad. However, the connection I have with my children and the time that we do have together, that's worth it. It's completely worth it. And I just couldn't do it in this area anymore. And it was hard for me because I didn't want to feel like I was running from my kids or them feel that way at all. Just for me, it's such a healthier place to be. And to where when I do see them, they get 100% of me.
Yeah. That's amazing. I love hearing that. And where are you in your relationship with addiction? Is it a constant struggle?
It's definitely a day-to-day, Rachel. I wish I could say, oh, I got that handled. No. It is, I'm either seeking a chemical solution or a spiritual solution. There's no in between. So if I'm waking up today, I'm seeking that spiritual solution, which is a connection. And that's what we're having.
Yeah.
I feel it. We have a connection. And this is so good for like the soul. This fills me. And it's hard to stay in that. And that's what I've struggled with my addiction is I love being sober. It's just staying there.
Right.
Through the marathon, as those that know me, it's not a sprint, Todd. This is a different race.
Yeah.
Because I was so trained to train for an event or train for this day that there's no day that we're training for here.
Yeah.
it's just the day to day. And I look at it like every day is game day for me in my life. There's no rehearsals. And a bad decision can take me out.
That's right.
So I need to stay close and honest.
And you probably need to really be within your purpose. Like if your purpose is art, mm-hmm. maybe that is something that on a daily basis, like hopefully people are, even though it is for money,
yes.
Are requesting you to do that. Cause that can really bring you into something where your mind is lost in that. And you're not dealing with the ups and downs that, by the way, every single person goes through in life. And you're just, have to retrain or train your mind to know that when you are in those lows and you feel like shit, sometimes it's best to just marinate that. Cause you know, you're going to get out of it. Life is a pendulum. So the extent you feel terrible, it's the same extent you're going to feel great. So sometimes you just got to go through it and be like, this fucking sucks, but I'm going to pick up my paintbrush and, you know, do something. So I really am pulling for you. I wish the best for you. I'm here for you as your friend. If you ever come to Palm Beach, Florida, please let me know. And I really do want the best for you. And I'm so happy you're there visiting your kids. I'm happy to see that you're with your mother. She seems like a wonderful woman.
Yep.
Anything else that I'm missing, to ask you that you want everyone to know?
I'm glad you mentioned my mom because she is the one, and there's so much talk about my dad, but she's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could tell she struggled so much with knowing what the right thing to do was and was really there for all of this with your father. And I'm so glad to hear she's there with you now, but obviously has that softer side and a little and softer spirit. And I'm sure she is a great grandmother.
She is. Tutu.
Tutu?
Mm-hmm.
That's what my mom uses for my daughter. That's what
Because
her name is Susan and she could never say Susu. So she's Tutu. I love that. My last question is, what do you think your story teaches about expectation, forgiveness, and what it really means to live on your own terms?
Well, my story has all of those things. And what was the question? Sorry, Rachel.
Well, essentially, I'm trying to have people understand from you that expectation of who you are supposed to be might not be who you want to be. And it's okay to follow your own path. You don't have to live. But I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I want to give a lesson from you on kind of what you've learned throughout being who you are.
You know, you really brought up some really good questions this morning. And
thank you.
It's like a fine line there, though, that having someone in your corner like my dad was helped me reach places that I didn't think I could. And also in art, having like my friend Bob helped me believe I could do this as a way of life. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for the people that encouraged that, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to play football until I was knee deep in it and couldn't run. So it's taken me a long, long time. And it's crazy to think we're turning to our teenagers going, what do you want to study in college? And like, what do you want to be? It's like pump the brakes. I don't know. And it's okay to not know. It's you'll figure it out. And I don't think it's a figuring out up here. It's more here.
Yeah.
It's a knowing, and not put a timeline on that. You can't. Yeah.
And to add to that, I would say it's also about trying different things.
Yes.
Seeing what works.
Yeah.
And the failure is part of learning what you want to do and what you don't want to do.
Right.
So I don't think people should shy away or be shameful about failing. It's part of life and what makes you better in the future. Because if you don't know what you're going to fail at, you don't know how to do it a different way, you know?
Yes, yes. And that's the best, really. It's not the best part, failing. But if you can accept the fact that that's part of it, more part of it than you want to be part of it, but that's part of the deal.
And it can probably take some of that fear you talked about out of it.
Yes.
You know, you can fail. Like you can get rid of a little bit of that fear of it because it's going to happen.
I was scared. Like I said, I was scared most of my life, but I was always in action. And that's the antidote, I think, is staying moving towards whatever that place you want to get to is.
Yeah. All right. Your new book is out, Outside the Lines in Football, Art, and Addiction. Where can people get this book?
They can go to marinovichbook.com or Amazon or anywhere.
Amazing.
Barnes and Noble.
Okay. Yeah. And if people want to commission you for art, where can they reach you?
marinovichart.com.
Okay. And is it just things that you've already done and are on there? Or can people reach out to you and say, here's my idea.
Yeah.
I have this size of a wall. Yeah. You go for it.
Yeah, I love those. And I've had some really great requests over the years where it's, I don't care what you do. It just has to be the size. I love those. But I will, I love connecting with the person. And it's a joint effort of creating something special.
Amazing. I love it. Todd, I wish you so much luck and faith and hope and all of the things in the future. I've really appreciated getting to know you. And I really hope that people read your book.
Thank you, Rachel. I'm a fan now of you.
Thank you, Todd. Mm-hmm. Have a great day.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.